It's the NPR News Update for Monday, October the 8th. Minnesota's news on your schedule. I'm Phil Picardi. Coming up, we talk with the editor of Minnesota Today about what's making headlines across the region. We hear about the tussle over a constitutional amendment requiring photo IDs to vote and what that might mean for soldiers. And Kurt Bills tries to chip away at Amy Klobuchar's voter base. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell says it's too early to tell when a new stadium in the works for the Minnesota Vikings will host a Super Bowl. Goodell was at the Vikings-Tennessee Titans game yesterday. Goodell says the league knows Vikings ownership wants to host the championship game and expects they will be contenders near the end of the decade.
I understand they've indicated an interest in maybe doing it around 18 or 19. And so they'll get in the rotation. We still have a couple of years before we even get to considering that. So it'll be down the road, which is probably good because I think you want to wait and get the stadium up and running.
Ground will be broken on the new billion-dollar Viking stadium next year, and it's scheduled to be completed in 2016. State health officials have confirmed a third case of fungal meningitis. The health department says all three of the patients were treated with injectable steroids from a Massachusetts pharmacy. That outbreak has killed seven people nationwide. Over the weekend, Health Department spokesman Buddy Ferguson says workers contacted hundreds of Minnesota patients who may have received the steroids.
We are being very cautious in terms of who we determine should be evaluated for possible meningitis. So we're including people who maybe have fairly subtle and relatively mild symptoms.
Ferguson says the third confirmed case, like the first two, is a woman in her 40s. Six Twin Cities facilities operated by medical advanced pain specialists and the Minnesota Surgery Center use the steroids. In northwestern Minnesota, fire management officials say the North Mini Fire near Red Lake is 30% contained. That fire, encompassing nearly 25,000 acres, is the largest in the region. Fire Information Officer Gil Knight says 150 people are working the fire.
Priorities are to continue to establish a containment line around the fire and then work on those areas of peat. If we don't get in there and get moisture on the peat, it can actually sit there literally over the winter and then come back up again.
Knight says roads that have been closed in the area will be reopened as soon as firefighters no longer need them. Firefighters have the County Road 27 fire near Carlstead, 90% contained. The Viking fire, named for the nearby town of Viking, is 80% contained. Joining us now to take a look at some other regional news is Michael Olson. He is the editor of Minnesota Today on the website nprnews.org. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Phil.
Well, what's in the news? I know we've got some politics. First, northeastern Minnesota, big money going into that race up there.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been focusing a lot on this congressional race, the 8th congressional race, where its incumbent, Chip Kravac, the Republican incumbent, is facing Rick Nolan, who was a former congressman. He's actually has more congressional experience than the incumbent in this race,
right,
which is interesting. Mm-hmm. But there has been just further evidence that this is considered a top-tier House race is that the super PAC spending that has gone into this, and those are the big political action committees, mm-hmm, that can take money from essentially anyone. They don't have to disclose their donors. This is the first election where we've had this much opacity in the election and where the money's coming from, and it's actually really turned up the volume of cash that is flowing into these races. And just in the 8th district alone so far, according to OpenSecrets.org, there has been $2.9 million,
wow,
in super PAC money that has gone in there. And that's on both sides. Mm-hmm. It's roughly 50-50 in terms of each for pro or con each candidate.
Hmm. Well, in another congressional race, we have an incumbent that has had no problem raising money, but maybe there is a problem in Michelle Bachmann's district for her anyway.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, Minnesota Public Radio News has reported on this race quite a bit. But the Washington Times, a more conservative-leaning paper from inside the Beltway, has taken notice. And we have a new article from them on Minnesota Today right now that says, you know, Michelle Bachmann won her re-election last time around by 12 points, mm-hmm, handily. Some that might even fall into a landslide,
yeah,
in some folks' handbooks. But right now they're saying that Jim Graves, who is the hotel magnet in here in Minnesota running against her, and they say that he's giving her a run for her money. Part of the points that they raise in this story is that somewhat of potentially a Tea Party fatigue. People are kind of wondering how much, you know, her focus on the national stage, if that is taken away from her service and her constituents there. But there are a lot of people in this district. It's a very conservative district, and the Tea Party is very popular there. So even though there's been some realignment with redistricting, you kind of wonder what actual mix of voters will show up. Is this a less conservative district than before? This article talks about how maybe there's a little bit of a shift there, enough of a shift to give Jim Graves a shot at it, potentially. A lot of national political observers are saying, you know, it was a safe district for Bachmann coming in, but they're easing back on that, and they're saying it leans towards her. Mm.
And that's the Washington Times, linked at nprnews.org, Minnesota Today.
That's right.
Now, the basketball Lynx, Minnesota Lynx, back in the WNBA Championship Series.
That's right. They just cleared their way there, and they're back in, I guess this is their second year in a row.
Right.
And that's very exciting. The Lynx have been, you know, definitely the strongest professional franchise in Minnesota in recent and current history, although the Vikings are doing pretty good right now, too.
4-1 right now. Yeah. That's sort of hard to believe. You know, the expectations coming into the season were not very high for the Vikings. But now 4-1 and in first place in the division. The Packers struggling. So maybe it will be a good winter for Minnesota sports.
I was coming down from Duluth yesterday and stopped in a sports bar on the way down to grab something midway. And saw that the Packers game was on. You know, the Vikings game was on there. And here we are in a Minnesota bar and the Packers game is on. I'm like, what the heck's going on? Have we just been hijacked here? But everyone was watching the Packer game to watch them lose.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Phil.
Michael Olson, the editor of Minnesota Today at nprnews.org. It's the NPR News Update, Minnesota's news on your schedule. For the rest of the podcast, politics. Military veterans have moved front and center in the debate over Minnesota's voter ID constitutional amendment. For voter ID supporters, veterans are a symbol to sell their message of election integrity. But Tim Pugmire reports opponents have turned to veterans to point out the potential problems soldiers could face when they try to vote.
The pro-amendment campaign organization Protect My Vote started airing its first television ad last month. The 30-second ad features Robert McWhite, a 91-year-old World War II veteran and former POW, who talks about defending the nation and its ideals.
Nothing is more central to America's success than the right to vote. That's why I'm supporting the effort to protect that right by showing photo ID.
A separate pro-amendment group, Voter ID for Minnesota, recently put up a Twin Cities billboard that includes the image of a returning soldier embracing a loved one. Dan McGrath, chairman of Protect My Vote, said he doesn't know anything about the other group's billboard, but he said his group's TV ad has a specific intent.
We did focus group testing on a number of different concepts, and one of them was around the idea of defending democracy. And so we tied the idea of defending democracy in war, as military veterans, with voter ID, and it focus group tested very well. So that's how our ad came together.
Additionally, McGrath said the ad tries to address allegations coming from amendment opponents that a photo ID requirement could make it harder for soldiers, veterans, and the elderly to vote. He insists that everyone who is eligible to vote will be able to get an ID and cast a ballot. As far as current military personnel, McGrath insists nothing will get in their way.
Soldiers overseas are protected by federal laws, and their vote can't be threatened by a constitutional amendment or state statute.
Voter ID opponents disagree. Greta Bergstrom, a spokeswoman for the anti-amendment campaign organization Our Vote, Our Future, said the McWhite ad uses powerful imagery. But Bergstrom said she thinks the ad also has a misleading message that tries to make voter ID sound simpler than it really is.
We know that there are over 11,500 military and other overseas voters that are in this position overseas that absolutely rely on and depend on utilizing mail-in balloting. And if this amendment actually were to pass, their ability to self-certify their absentee ballot will actually go away.
In making her case, Bergstrom points to a specific sentence in the proposed constitutional amendment. It reads, all voters, including those not voting in person, must be subject to substantially equivalent identity and eligibility verification prior to a ballot being cast or counted. She interprets that to mean military and other overseas voters will be required, like everyone else, to show a photo identification that includes their current address. A former Marine echoed Bergstrom's concern. Ashwin Medea, a Minneapolis lawyer and one-time DFL congressional candidate, said he voted by absentee ballot in 2004 while serving in Okinawa, Japan. He did not have to prove his identity to anyone. Medea said he's concerned that what has been an easy process will get much harder under voter ID.
Now, these aren't insurmountable obstacles by any stretch. If someone was very dedicated, these boxes could be checked, but they do impose additional hurdles and additional burdens and additional time on people that I think are already very busy doing a lot of important work for the country. And I don't really see the need for that, and I don't think it's particularly appropriate.
The disagreement over the potential impact of voter ID is fueled by the lack of detail in the proposed constitutional amendment. The brief document makes no mention of military or overseas voters. If voters pass the amendment in November, state lawmakers will have to fill in many of the blanks next year with enabling legislation. Other states with voter ID laws have specific exemptions for soldiers or allow for the use of U.S. military identification.
Tim Pugmire at the state capitol. Mark Zdechlik has been spending a lot of time in northeastern Minnesota, and he says the two candidates in Minnesota's most heated congressional campaign meet for their first debate this week.
8th District Republican Congressman Chip Kravac and his DFL challenger Rick Nolan will debate for an hour Tuesday morning in Duluth. Kravac is one of the top targets of National Democrats this election. The Republican is wrapping up his first term after his upset victory over 18-term Congressman Jim Oberstar 2 years ago. Nolan and Kravac have each been promoting themselves as the best choice for those who want to see expanded mining on the Iron Range in northeastern Minnesota. They've also been battling over Medicare. Nolan says the Medicare voucher plan Kravac twice voted for would be a boon to insurance companies at the expense of future seniors. Kravac has criticized Nolan for supporting cutting the growth of Medicare spending by more than $700 billion, even though Kravac twice voted for a similar cut.
Mark Zdechlik on the 8th race. The Senate race isn't seen as being quite as close. Every public opinion poll shows Republican State Representative Kurt Bills far behind Democratic incumbent Amy Klobuchar. Brett Neely has this look at the race and Bills' strategy.
Out campaigning last week, Kurt Bills sounded optimistic that he could overcome the 29-point gap between him and Amy Klobuchar in the latest Star Tribune poll.
Minnesota is known for late-breaking races, too. I think there's a little bit of a history there, so we don't get discouraged.
But political scientist Steve Smith at Washington University in St. Louis says Bills has very little money and very little time left before Election Day.
His options are really quite limited, and so he's going to be looking for high-impact ads, and they're likely to be very, very negative because they're the ones that tend to move the voters the most.
But the Bills campaign has raised much less money than Klobuchar's, and while Klobuchar has started running positive TV ads, it's not clear Bills has the resources to respond. Instead, his campaign has been issuing press releases attacking Klobuchar, and those attacks have gone beyond just the senator. One target is Twin Cities car dealer Paul Walzer. Walzer says he traditionally supports Republicans, but endorsed Klobuchar in a campaign ad because she helped keep his dealerships open during the auto bailout. The Bills campaign called Walzer the beneficiary of crony capitalism. Walzer says he's not taking the charge personally because of where Bills stands in the race.
You know, clearly a long way behind and, you know, literally has no chance to win this thing. So I think that probably invites a more kind of a desperate environment to try to get some traction in his campaign.
Bill started the campaign with a host of disadvantages. He's currently in his first term in the State House and has very little statewide name recognition. Klobuchar's approval rating has been near 60%. That number may have scared away a number of better-known Republicans from even entering the race. Bill's won the nomination with the backing of libertarian-minded supporters of Texas Congressman Ron Paul, who ran for the GOP presidential nomination. Then, Bill's endorsed Mitt Romney for president, alienating him from some of Paul's supporters. Marianne Stebbins chaired Ron Paul's Minnesota campaign. She says since winning the nomination, Bill's has tried too hard to run as what she calls a conventional Republican.
I think the only path to victory against Klobuchar would have been for someone to run a very independent, non-traditional campaign going after those independents and disaffected Democrats on the civil liberties issues.
Bills has also continued to work at his day job, teaching a high school class in the morning before heading out on the campaign trail. Political scientist Steve Smith says that decision won't help Bills in the campaign.
The fact is, the modern statewide race in a state like Minnesota really requires a full-time effort, full-time in both fundraising and in reaching out to voters.
As of the last report in late July, Bills had raised only about $400,000 and had less than $6,000 in the bank. Klobuchar, who has had a six-year head start in fundraising, had raised more than $6 million, with over $5 million left for campaigning. Bill says his fundraising numbers reflect his populist grassroots campaign.
You know, we're working as hard as we can to fill them up to what we need. But there's not going to be a lot of rich elites who run to me donating money the way that I talk.
Smith suggests that Republicans may pay a price for selecting a weak candidate in the only statewide race this year, all the way down the ballot.
They're not benefiting from the ability of the top candidate to generate excitement and bring out a crowd.
State Republican Party Chairman Pat Shortridge didn't return calls when asked to comment on the bill's campaign.
That's our man in D.C., Brett Neely. I'm Phil Picardi, and that's the NPR News Update for this Monday. I'll have the Tuesday edition right here tomorrow.